Recorded live.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Genesis Science Fiction Radio Show, a service of the Black Science Fiction Society.com website. Today is your December 1st, 2017 edition. We've been off, I guess, for a few weeks, probably Thanksgiving, some other things came up. Tonight, we are having the creative minds behind the Raxxon Universal Dominion series. And we're gonna dive deep into what they're doing now and find out a little bit about how they got started. So I want to welcome Damone Amerson and Thomas Johnson to the show. Now, Thomas, is it Thomas Johnson the third?
Second.
Second. Okay. All right. Are you working on the third?
Not right now.
Okay. Just wanted to check. Welcome, guys. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Oh, thank you for having us on.
Oh, definitely a pleasure to be here.
Oh, yeah. Now, aren't both of you in Detroit right now?
I'm in Detroit.
He's in Detroit. I'm in Roseville. We're just a few miles apart.
Okay. So. Well, I mean, that's kind of cool because, you know, a lot of the collaborations, you know, like if I've ever talked to two at once or, you know, people who have mentioned that they have a team, you know, with the advent of the internet, with the advent of so many tools, it's not very often that I'll run into, you know, co-creators or team members who are necessarily within geographical distance. You know, they're close.
Yeah.
So this is kind of cool that you two are both where you are and you can, you know, you actually can hang together if you want to. For those of you who are looking for their work, let me just pop this out for you. I'll put it in the chat room, but you can look them up, look up their work at Raxxon Dominion, no space or anything, .com, and check out the home website there, and I'm going to dump it into the chat room for those of you who show up live. Anyway, first of all, how long have you guys been doing this together?
Let's see.
Is it going on like 3 years now? Almost?
It's been about
almost 3 years going on.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and then one of you, I don't care which one, but I mean, what was kind of like your origin story? You know, we don't want a DC rewrite or a Marvel rewrite or anything, but really, how did you all get together and decide to do what you're doing? Well, you know what I'm talking about. You know, you get a director who doesn't want to have to stick with canon, who doesn't care that Superman's not supposed to be killing folks, and then they go, well, let's just start over. But for you guys, I mean, how did you guys, like, meet and get started? Either of you can start talking and then switch off what have you.
Well, I'll let you. I did most of the talking last time, so I'll let you go through that.
Well, with me, Thomas, it started a long time ago. Actually, I started Raxxon back in the 90s. And, you know, it was evolving over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I had met Damone a couple years back through his uncle, and we had worked together, and he was always telling me about him. And then I finally got off my butt and hooked up with Damone, and, you know, he actually was interested in a project, you know, and just was like, you know, saying, because originally I was just hiring him as a commissioner. And
right.
He was like, you know, He was enthused in the project and everything. And I said, you know, when I saw his work, I said, okay, this guy likes the story, likes everything about it. I said, this guy would be a good partner. So when I extended that olive branch to him, you know, saying, let's be 50-50 partners, would you be down for it? And he was like, yeah. I'm like, okay. So we started working on the project, and it started evolving even further, you know, from just what I kind of had in mind was just basic, you know. It's kind of like, you know, you there's not a story out there that hasn't been written.
Sure.
But the most thing you
except
can do
mine.
Is just...
No, except mine.
Okay.
Oh, no, come on. Black folks on the backside of the moon while white folks don't know? Shoot, nobody saw that coming.
And, you know, so...
Anyway, go ahead, yeah.
So, you know, it was kind of like, you know, one thing I said I didn't want to have in the story was, you know, you always have your typical alien sci-fi shows with mechs and everything, where
right.
there's aliens here for our resources or our women or something like that. I said, you know, that was never the case in this. I said, you know,
right.
they're not trying to look like us or anything like that. They don't care for our cultures. They're not trying to intertwine or be, you know, you never see them as bounty hunters with us and, you know, wearing our clothes or anything like that. So they're completely
right.
alien from us, you know,
uh-huh.
and you know, they're here not for any of those reasons. You know, they're here for something totally different. They're here because we gave amnesty to a race that they were after.
Oh,
so
okay. Well, wait,
we got
before
involved
you go
in
on.
That war.
Yeah. In the 90s, was this strictly print only? Because, you know, that would have been way early in the digital age, you know?
When you say print only, what do you mean?
Like comic book or you know, I forget what they call it, graphic novel, or what medium were you working in at that time? You know, when you started?
When I originally started it, it
yeah.
was pretty much just in the form of a source book.
Okay.
Which was
all right.
Because I didn't have, I wasn't doing any comics or anything. I just had basically a book with the drawings, stats on them, and a file on
okay.
just, you know, like a whole plethora of just the aliens, the human ships, mechs, everything like that. And I had this one book that was actually broken up into, I think it was 12 chapters.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was like drawings and information in each one, you know, to where one chapter was just strictly aliens. The other one was just showing like the progression over the years, because it was over generations, several generations
sure.
that the whole story was taking place. And it
yeah.
was originally in black and white because I hadn't colored everything, you know. And so it was just evolving from there. And then it was
right.
like, it hit me. I was like, I have no human. I reference to humans, but I have no pictures of any. Because I couldn't draw people that good. I could draw the mech ships and everything like that. But I said, I'm talking about these characters and I don't have them in here. So the book started getting bigger and bigger as I started trying to add in people, you know, drawing
mm-hmm.
as best as I could, you know, busts of characters, you know, and just showing, giving a reference and everything. So that made the book thicker, and the book wound up getting pretty thick. To where I said, this got to change. So, like, when I met Damone, it was like, thank God, because when I met with him, he was giving me so many ideas that I said, okay, I split the book up, you know, and just make it source books. And he was the one that gave me, him and a friend named Tyrone Jackson, they gave me the kick in the butts and said, you know, go ahead and do the comics. And I'm
mm-hmm.
like, okay, you know, because I was thinking of, I had put together a little comic, and it was just going to go in a source book as just a, you know, just a little something extra in there. And Damone was the one that said, well, why don't you just make it a comic book? And I was like, well, I hadn't thought about it. He was like, it's good enough to be a book on its own. And I said,
right.
well, how about a part two to it? Because it was just only 11 pages. He said, yeah, do that. And that was actually like the first comic. And he actually knocked out a comic for me, was working on my first comic, which was actually a comic that was further down the line. But when he did it, when he was working on it, I'm like, man, I was so tempted to make it the first book.
Yeah, and I drew that book twice, too, because
yeah.
I kind of changed the art style, so which I think was a better decision for that book.
Right. And so you actually, I mean, did two run-throughs before you kind of settled on a style?
Well, originally we wanted to. Originally, Thomas told me he wanted to do more like a manga style, which I love
okay.
manga. But ultimately, we just settled on a more, I want to say, an in between Western and manga style. So, it just became more important just to make it look good and just have fun with it. You know, not necessarily box ourselves into a specific, you know, a specific
mm-hmm.
style. So. And not to mention some of the other artists we have, you know, have a various different styles. So that kind of gave us a little bit of freedom in that area. So,
well, yeah, I mean, especially in the boxing in part. I mean, if you have more than one creative mind working on something, obviously you you have opened up the opportunity for a different styles, even different storylines and things like that, because not everybody thinks identically. And I'm thinking, you know, just from looking at the covers, you know, you have actually different styles in the covers in terms of the style of artwork.
And yet
it's all in the same universe, which I think is pretty cool. You know, you've got, I'm looking at them right now, and I like the one that I like the best is the one with the black background with the single head on it.
Oh, yeah.
because I love that style, man. But then, you know, you look down the line, and if you didn't have the same header at the top of each one of these covers, people could think that these were from different universes, which that's just cool as hell to me, because it shows that you've got reach and that you have, if you're able to transcend a single style. You know, some people think that's good, some people think that's bad. You know, a lot of people read things, read series because they see something familiar. They're looking for familiar. Like, they're looking for familiar characters. Like, my series are just books. I don't have any pictures at all, but they know that the same characters will be showing up. But this year, I think you guys are brilliant, because I think this gives you more longevity. Is that what you were looking toward in breaking up your styles like that?
Well, we have different artists, like me, Thomas, and a few other artists we have. So,
of course, yeah.
That's kind of like one of those things that naturally want the artists to draw what looks good, you know. If we try to box them in and say, okay, it has to look specifically like this style, then it can limit the artist. But one thing, too, is the story is so expansive that it's like, you know, it will be kind of probably work against us to try to, you know, put more limitations on ourselves in that way. So,
right.
But one thing we do is, like, when it comes to, you know, keeping things familiar or similar, if we put, like, if I'm doing a book that's, you know, a story arc that's a couple books long, I'll do all of those books, so that way the art will be consistent for that entire story arc, you know.
Yeah.
And
one
of the things too about our story too is our story is not—it's not really a character story. Like, you have different types of ways of telling stories, right? Like, you have character stories like Spider-Man, which is about Peter Parker and his journey as that hero, and then you have stories like Lord of the Rings, which is not about one specific character. There is important characters, but it's not necessarily about Frodo or Gandalf. It's about all of them together and what's going on in Middle Earth, right? You know, the Lord of the Rings. So our story is more like the Lord of the Rings in the sense that we have all these characters, but ultimately the story we're telling is about, you know, this overarching thing that's happening in, you know, in between the humans and these other alien races,
as well as the humans.
right.
Well, so your creative universe is very broad, and that also gives you flexibility, because you don't paint yourself into a corner. Like the TV show that Halle Berry was in. What was that called? Extent?
The movies? I know she was in
a TV show that went for either one or two seasons, because, and then they painted themselves in a corner and had no place to go. In TV terms, they call it jumping the shark, you know what I mean? And so that can't happen with you guys, because you already planned ahead from the very start.
Right.
You know,
and
you
that's another thing, too. Well,
I was going to say
that's a good point, because our story, too, is we kind of got it mapped out as far as where we want to go with the story. Like, the comics we have is just a small part of the story. Like, we haven't even got started on, you know, where this is all going to lead. So all the characters you're reading about, all the events that's taking place in these comics, you know, it's leading to future things or things that's coming. So So yeah, so there's a lot. There's a lot. I would almost say that the comics we have now, which is 11, we still got one more, which is Nick, that we're trying to finish up.
Yeah,
to me,
actually,
I almost see those
it was
almost
actually
like
comic
a,
book 11.
yeah, it is comic book 11. Last Man Standing is 12, but I almost see that as almost like an intro to this story and to this universe, because we don't like wait. And one thing too is we don't wait like 100 issues to give you the good stuff. Like we give you the nitty gritty of the story. It's like we just, you know, straight up just throw it at you. But what's cool is, you know, because there's so much going on, it's like it doesn't stop there. There's you know, more that we expand on as far as characters, and you'll see these characters have kids. You'll see technology for like our mechs, which we call expanders, grow and develop. You know, you'll see new expander technology being developed. So it's almost a story that kind of continues on. And that's because, like I said, we only just got started. Like we haven't even got to, you know, future things that's going to happen or that's taking place between, you know, like the humans in our story or Earth. And this conflict between these alien races. So,
well, it's a long stretch still coming.
But yeah. I could talk in depth about the story forever, but because I really, really, it gets really exciting because there's so much that happens. But one thing I can say is not confusing. And you know, like I said, we don't do the loss where we get you to keep watching episodes until we get that doesn't really lead up to anything. It's like we give you the meat of the story that you need to know right then and there. But
because the universe is so broad and that you planned ahead, the cool thing is when you right now, you know, so early on, drill down into, you know, great action or, you know, a subplot that really, really, you know, that's really, I don't know what descriptive action, but it's really important or it's very revealing about something in your universe. Because you have such an expansive universe, it's not a spoiler.
Right,
you know, it's
exactly.
It's not like,
right,
oh,
right.
Man, they've been playing with that forever. You know, they put that in there and now they can't get away from it. Well, no, you already from the beginning plan, you know, it to be as big as it is. And so let me ask you this, Mom. You know, what was it when you saw, you know, what Thomas had put together back in the 90s and what he'd been refining and refining and refining? What was the big draw for you when you saw that, you know?
That's hard to answer. Because it's like I already love Mecha and stuff like that. So that I was already like, okay, let's go for it. But when he started telling me more about the direction you want to take the story as far as what the Raxxon is and even what that's going to lead up to, I just got more and more interested. Like, one of the things that called me was, like, I never heard a story like that before. It's like, I've seen a lot of sci-fi shows. I've seen a lot of mecha anime and stuff like that. So,
right.
And most people that I talk to at conventions and, you know, other artists who have stories, usually they fall in one or two. They fall in usually a few categories where it's like either they're telling a similar story to something you already heard. You know, instead of Spider-Man, it's Tarantula Dude, and it's like, okay, that's it's not bad, but it's like, okay, it's not. Or it's something like it's a gimmick type comic where it's like, yeah, the guy's a superhero, but he also works at the grocery store, and it's like, so he's kind of like, in between, he has to hide his identity, but at the same time be good at his job. And it's like, that can be cool and funny and all of that, but it's like, that's that sort of gimmicky type. But with this story, it was almost like the stuff that I loved growing up, like, you know, watching Robotech or Exo Squad or, you know, any of the number of different stories. It's like that same sort of excitement and just depth to the story. I'm like, wow, that's original. And it gave me that same type of feel, like, that's something that's really, really cool. That hasn't been done before. It's not necessarily copying anything. And it's like, that's a good, you know, that's a good story. That's something that I want to help develop and take that, you know, take that further. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what drew me in, you know. So
no, I mean,
because I hear a lot of comic book pitches, a lot, you know. And like I said, none of them are necessarily bad. You know, I never say it's bad because there's stuff that I like that's really, really, you know, really out there. But it's like you rarely see someone who's like they got a comic story where it's like it's something that you really, really haven't seen or you haven't seen a lot of. And that makes you go, that's different. Like it's not only good, but it's also that's different, you know. So.
There are so many overlapping themes. I mean, look at how many people are doing, you know, vampire stories or doing zombie
or
stories. And you know, and fan fiction. You know, you got a lot of fan fiction.
Oh yeah,
who lack, and I don't say this really badly, but they lack their own imagination. So they do glom onto copying things that they've already seen.
Right.
And you guys are right. It is difficult to put something together that is totally original. And let's be honest, we do borrow memes from other places because it makes our storytelling easier. I mean,
right.
Let's say we had, alien mechs or even Earth mechs that were so different that you had to spend half of your time in exposition describing how different they are instead of saying, you know, it's good and it's bad. It's like a double-edged sword. You know, you want to be different. You want to be different. You want people to go, this is kind of refreshing. I don't see this in every other comic book. But then on the other hand, you don't want it to be so foreign that, you know, that people who are lazy readers or lazy consumers go, oh man, this is too hard for me to think about, or I don't feel like doing that reading, or whatever excuse they have. It's hard to get readers these days. Let's be honest. You know, readers are falling by the wayside. And one of the things that we all have to do as content creators is to be able to showcase our content so that we get repeat viewers, we get repeat customers.
Right.
So it's hard. You don't want to. You know, I am willing to bet all the money that I hid offshore that you guys have great ideas, but you say to yourselves, well, we don't want to get too far out because we might lose them. Has that ever come up?
It did, but you know, the way it came up, I think with us was just, I think it came up with us with just different things, you know, where I might have been thinking about, because I know me and Damone had this conversation recently on, like, my mind is like, okay, I'm getting older. I want to get a lot of stuff done. And he's like, okay, but you got to think rational and you got to pace ourselves, you know, and look at the reality of the situation. It's like, okay, yeah, you might want to do all of that, but we got to factor in time, cost, and technology, you know, because it takes time to do all of this stuff. You got to have the right technology because you don't want to keep going back and forth and spending money on stuff that you may not have needed, and now you done forked out all this money, and it's like, okay, this isn't something that we should have even bought. Now I got some stuff I don't need and trying to get rid of it.
and can't even
use it. All it does is delay what we could have just took a little bit of time for and just really mapped out and saying, okay, this is the direction we want to go. So let's put a game plan together and then work on that exclusively. And then give it the time and effort that it needs and grow it the right way so that we don't have to come back and fix any mistakes on it, you know, of just rushing through it and just being like, it's a good idea. Yeah, let's do that, you know.
Right.
Sure.
Well, and at the bottom line is it is a business, you know.
That's true.
Sometimes I think for a lot of creatives in the beginning, the hardest hurdle to jump is making sure that your efforts are going to bring you the return that you need. A lot of creatives think that they should, that whatever they do, there's a return that they deserve. And that's not always the case. That's the tough climb. But you have to pay your bills. You have to stay in a house. You have to, you know, all of these things that are business decisions that have to be made are at the bottom line of all your creativity, because you don't necessarily get money just for being creative. You make your money by other people liking your work and purchasing your work. So it's sobering sometimes, because you think, oh man, we could do this. Or like you said, Thomas, you know, you talk about getting older, kind of thinking about, oh, I'd like to do some other things. I'd like to cash out. I would like to make 200% of what it costs me to live from my art, so that, you know, I don't have to work a day job, or I don't have to think about creating a new universe or anything like that. And then I see what you're saying, Thomas, where you want to, you know, you definitely want to think in terms of what is this going to do for me, and what is it going to bring me in the future. And then, Damone, you sound the younger, and you're thinking, okay, well, this has legs, this has potential, and what we're doing, how we're exploiting our creativity, is making money. So you also don't want to spoil that either. So
I'm not getting any younger either. You know, I'm already like, I just turned 34 like what, 2 months ago. So there were some realizations in that moment. So I know that seems young to a lot of people. They're always like, yeah, you're still young. But it's like, just yesterday I was just 20.
No,
I woke up the next day and I'm 34 already. I'm like, wow. So it's not like I'm getting any younger, but at the same time, it's like,
go ahead.
Yeah. At the same time, when it comes to like creative projects or creative things, like, you know, like what we're doing, what I found is it's always the tortoise and the hare. You know, it can seem like, yeah, let's, you know, just throw all this stuff at the wall and see what sticks and just go straight ahead. But at the same time, most of the artists that I follow, they always got their success by doing the tortoise, you know, just the long road. It doesn't always seem, you don't always see it. You're always like, man, it's never going to get as big as I want, or be as successful as I want, or make as much money as I want. But but at the same time, it's like, it's a slow grind, you know. It's like, it's time to build up that fan base, to get your stuff popular, get your stuff out there, you know. And most of the time, it's not really your fault. It's just, you know, you might run a Kickstarter, and then after the Kickstarter ends, you get 100 people saying, well, if I would have known about the Kickstarter, I would have, you know, I didn't even know about it. And you have that problem where it's like, well, obviously I need to get myself out there more so that way I can reach more people. But what I found is, though, it's that slow grind of just really putting in the work, you know, putting in the time and slowly building yourself up. That always pays off in the end. Like every successful artist that I follow who did the same thing, where they just started off, you know, in their basement or their one bedroom apartment, just drawing sketches or whatever, who are now, you know, successful. They started off, you know, they didn't start off with a lot. They started off really, really small. And it's just over time of just mostly just putting their stuff out there, they just slowly built that up to the point to where they can run a Kickstarter and it'll automatically be successful, because they have that fan base that they built up for so many years, that it's like, you know, and I see it all the time. Like every artist that I follow, you know, and I listen to their advice and see what they did. And there's artists that I follow who were, you know, not really that popular or not really that big. And nowadays I look at them, I'm like, wow, like they just, like after all those years, and all they did was just, like I said, they just slowly but surely built themselves up, you know.
Well, the universal challenge for any, and we're all entrepreneurs, especially when we start, but the universal challenge is having our work rise above the background noise. Because there's so many people today, because the tools make it much, much easier. The bar to entry is much, much lower. So, you know, when you talk about looking at these other artists and also looking at the way you guys started, because when you think about, you know, Thomas starting in the 90s, the thing is perseverance. And if you persevere, you know, the longer you're around, the more people who will see you unless you do something incredibly, incredibly stupid. You know.
Right.
So the perseverance is a huge part. And that's sometimes the hardest part for some people to, you know, they block their own way to success. You know what I mean? Because
right.
they give up really early. And
right.
and that's the thing. You know, if you're going to have faith in yourself, then you have that faith has to transcend time. You know what I mean?
You know, it can't.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, there's one important thing that I always tell artists, like, that I meet or who will be like, well, how do I get my book out there? How do I do what you're doing? And I always say hard work. Like going back to when we met, you know, when I met Thomas and he was telling me about, you know, Raxxon. One thing that struck me too is, because I've met people before who were like, yeah, I'm working on this story or whatever, was Thomas, he didn't just like talk like, yeah, I got this idea for a story. He put in the work, you know, like
right.
when he said, hey, I have already know what, you know, what expanders or whatever is going to, you know, be in this part of the story or what this one's going to do. And I say, well, you know, what do expanders look like? He didn't just hand me a drawing. He handed me a whole damn book, like, boom, like, boom. Like, bam. And I was like, what in the world? I'm like, what in the world?
I can honestly
say that's the first time that someone's like, here, boom, 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 handed me a book. And I'm like, it did worse. He's like, oh, that's not even all of them. So he showed me his photo bucket account, and I'm just scrolling through. The computer is struggling to load all these damn images. And I'm like, what in the world? But that's one thing that I always tell, like, you have to put in the work. Like, you can't just, I mean, because we've all been there where we, you know, spend that time, like, yeah, I got this good idea for a story. But at some point, you gotta sit down, you gotta put in the work to put it on paper, to draw it out, to do whatever, to get it, you know, to start that process to get it out there. And I see that, too, with a lot of artists where they don't really put in the work sometimes. Like, they'll
right.
have the idea or sometimes they'll have the passion, but they just can't just – and I'm like, you got to do that. You have to get over that step. It's hard, but once you start doing it and you do more drawings or do more writing, it's like a snowball. It just – it kind of just starts to flow after a while. But yeah, that was one thing, too, about Thomas. Like, and that's the advice that I give everybody. Like, when people say, how did you get started with doing conventions? And I'm like, I just went to a convention. I did my first convention. I had, like, 3 drawings that I was selling. It was pretty terrible. I had, like, 3 drawings total. And, you know, I made, like, I think I made $15 that whole 3 days. But the experience and meeting people and talking, it was like, I did another convention. And I had more art. And I did another one. I had more art. And it's just kind of just over the years, I just, you know, now I know what to do or how to do conventions. You know, the same
well,
thing
plus,
with comics and art and
yeah,
everything. It's like
plus,
you have to.
Learning from other people is also part of the job, too. You know,
yeah.
you don't always want to reinvent the wheel every damn time you have a new idea.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Right.
You know, you want to peek around and peek what other people are doing who are doing something similar. Because you can learn. There are people out there who are stubborn, who go, man, I'm going to do this on my own. I don't need anybody else. Ain't nobody smart as me. I'm not doing anything. And a lot of those
yeah,
people,
some of those.
You know, never,
always,
never, you don't see them again.
Yeah, we're always telling people, like, if you want to do something big on your by yourself, it's going to take you forever. Like if you wanted to build a house, yes, it's possible for one person to build a huge house. Of course, it's going to take that one person a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, if
oh,
you
yeah.
don't want to turn this idea into your lifelong project, you know, to where it'll be written on your gravestone, you know, such and such this year to that year, finish such and such project, you know, it's like, well, you're going to need help. You're going to need, you know, to start connecting with other people. So.
Sure. Now,
but yeah, but
being
I definitely,
go ahead.
I definitely get advice from. from other artists who I see are doing similar stuff or going down a similar path. And believe it or not, there are some artists out there who just can knock out a whole graphic novel in like a year, you know, a couple hundred page graphic novel in a year all by themselves. And it's crazy, but you have those super passionate people who just, they live and breathe their idea. So.
Well, also, if you do something long enough, you tend to understand your own process better and you do get into a groove.
Right.
You know,
that's important too.
The first book I wrote took 9 months. The last book I just wrote took 4 months. You know, which is huge. I mean, you know, they weren't the same page count, but still, I am so adjusted and so familiar with my own process. It's easier to do it now. And like you guys have been doing this, you know, people think, oh, 3 years isn't a long time. But if you think of it hour by hour with you guys working on your stuff, hour by hour, day by day, that is a long-ass time.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm convinced that you guys have a process and you've refined it down to where it's working very effectively for you. That's a good question to ask. Between the two of you, like if you're in full-on creative mode, okay, how long does it take, average, to get one comic from start to maybe sending it to the printer? You know, what do you think in terms of time you guys are expending together to do that, and with the rest of your team?
I say this: I've knocked out comics in that 12 comic book arc. Because I had so many stories already in my head, so it was like a lot easier for me, you know, where I would always let Damone know, okay, this is a story I got, and I would always run it past him first, you know, before I just be like, okay, well, I'm going to crank this story out, and we're just going to go roll with this one. It's like I always wanted to be consistent with the arc that we're going. So I've had, I would storyboard a comic in less than a month, and you know, show it to him when we would meet up and let him do the reading. And be like, if he looks like he's not liking this, I'm going to be going back to the drawing board and, you know, see what he says. And then it's like, if he likes it, I'm like, okay, let me get started on the next one. And then it's like the next process, I send it off to the, you know, our commissioners that we may have, our artists, to have them go ahead and find out, do the comic. And we'll talk about which artists we might want to have working on it, because that was like a similar thing, like we were saying earlier, not to change subject, how we saw having multiple artists. Because the another reason of having multiple artists, because we got, like, my goal last year was to have 12 comics all done by the end of the year. Got so seven.
We had so how many? Was it seven? Was it
but
seven?
The thing
yeah,
was
seven. That's right.
Is that if I would have tried to lock one artist into trying to do that many comics, you know, it would have been, because a lot of these artists, a lot of commissioners that we have, you know, they work on multiple projects. So to have this person trying to lock in and just do my stuff only, I wouldn't have had nowhere near that many comics last year. I might have had maybe 2 to 3. And, you know, because they have a life as well, you know, so it's like, that's why we have, like we said, the different art, where it looks a little different some here and there. And I like that because, like, you know, it's, like I said, it's the diversity of it and showing different art styles, and like to give them that creativity, because it's like I might do a storyboard of a comic, and they would ask me and saying, okay, well, can I put the person at this angle, you know, to give it a little bit more this and that. And I'm like, absolutely. I like to give them that creative freedom, because also it helps with the price sometimes, you know. And, you know, give them a little bit of, you know, give them that creativeness so that they can, because their name, it goes into the comics as well. So if they're going to be putting their name on something, they want to have it to where, you know, well, I don't want to have my name in this book and it looks like crap, you know, because you just don't want it to look good and I'm trying to help you out. So I always say I bow to the masters of it. So, you know, when people are saying, I can make this look good, I give them a shot. Now, we might have little differences here and there. I'm like, that kind of just doesn't fit what I'm trying to tell right there. Change it.
Uh-huh.
Can you change it a little bit? And usually we get that good dialogue, you know, as long as we got good communication. So that's the thing that I find is paramount with our comics, you know, is in that process, you know, it's like that becomes the longest process is just getting the artist to knock out the book. And that primarily comes from the cash part. You know, it's like with some, we got the faster you pay, faster they can knock it out. So if I can come up with the money in 1 month, they'll be done in a month. But, you know, that it can get expensive pretty quick. And, you know, when you're trying to pace yourself, it's like, okay. So
man,
reasonable
goals.
We
got lucky and got some pretty good commissioners.
Yeah.
So they're really solid. So.
And just, you know, pacing ourselves for what we're trying to get done.
Right. It sounds like you don't have a hard and fast rule and you don't automatically set hard deadlines. But I guess we can look overall that over the last 3 years, you did get 11 done, and it sounds like you're on the verge of, like, knocking out 12 very, very soon. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. It's book 11 because we actually got book 12 finished. But book 11 is actually halfway done, and I just gotta finish it. It's already been written and everything like that. It's just the commissioner that I have working on it. I just gotta get her paid so she can go ahead and finish it, and we can just send it on off to print, and we'll have it.
Yeah.
So goal I plan to have finished. I plan to have that comic finished by February at the latest.
Yeah.
By the end of February.
And as we look at this as a business, is the business aspect of doing what you guys are doing difficult for you guys, or have you kind of gotten into that kind of a groove? You know, you know what the expectations are, you know what the realistic possibilities are, and you feel very, you know, pretty confident that you've got a good hand on how to do the business part of getting this done.
I think together we have a good handling on it.
Yeah.
Because where I may not know certain things, Damone knows them, and vice versa, he may not know certain things that I may know of. Like I deal with a lot of contracts. So I write contracts, you know, and everything like that. As far as I've had businesses before, little small businesses. And, you know, and when he chimes in and saying, we should have our own, commissioner, forms and everything, I was like, okay, got that, you know, different little things that I might not have thought about that we should be doing. He was chiming in saying we should, and things that I wasn't thinking about, he was saying we should be doing that. And you know, little things that I might have been saying, well, let's add this in there as well. So it's like, we got it down to a science. The only thing is that we just have to perfect minor things, you know, that we've been doing. Because the funny thing is, we have so much fun when we do the conventions, we lose. We are just like horrible. We be like, everything is for sale on this table. So we, at the end of the day, we just walking away with all this money. We like, how many books did we sell? I don't know. How many did we have to start? You know what? I don't know, but we sure got a lot less than when we started. So, you know.
We
be looking like, well, we covered this. We dang sure made our table money back and some, so we in the green. So.
But, I mean, come on. That's not a bad thing. I mean, think about that. You guys are in a serious business. You're actually producing something that people want, and you can still have fun. I mean, think about that.
Yeah. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
That's a dream for content creators. I mean, I would love to not have to go fix stupid-ass people's computers, you know, get porn off of computers before somebody has to turn it back into IT. And stuff. Man, I would give my left you-know-what to be able to quit that and just write. So, I mean, what you guys have managed to do is, you know, maybe you're not making 100% of your revenue from your creative work, but you've managed to find a groove where not only do you work effectively together, but it sounds like you're still having fun.
Yeah.
And that's that's even worth money. Because you know what? If you're making enough money to cover your nut, you know, at a convention, and you know, the box that you have to bring home is a lot lighter than the box you brought there, that's
exactly.
not a bad day. That's
yeah.
not a bad
mm-hmm.
day at all.
Because yeah, I mean,
one thing we said we wanted. What?
Go ahead.
Oh, we've been having so much fun. I said the one thing that I said I wanted to make sure that we always do is have fun with this project, because I said if we're not having fun, then something's wrong. You know, because it for me, it's not about, you know, the money so much, because it's like, yeah, if we hit it big, oh, we'd be happy. You know, don't get me wrong. I would be joyous, you know, but it turns into more of, you know, the journey and, you know, getting it out there, you know, being able to say I was able to do this, you know, and that people enjoyed it. Will it make me rich? Don't know. A part of me is like, I don't care, you know, if it does or not. You know, it becomes a thing of, you know, it's a fun project. It's something I always wanted to do. And I never thought in a million years, truthfully, that I would have even gotten this far, because it's been in my head so long and I've been just slow pacing over so many years. And, you know, like they say, you might be working hard, but you're not working smart, you know,
right.
been doing that for years until, you know, meet the right person, you know, and partner up with them, and, you know, as business wise, and they giving you the ideas and, you know, you're feeding off of each other and saying, you know, this is actually a good way of growing this. And I never would have thought of this, because I always imagined having a tangible ship in my hand of one of our stuff, but I never,
right.
I always dreamed of it, but I never thought I'd actually have one. Never thought I would. You know, even when the 3D printers came out, I was always talking about getting Ultimaker 2. I am horrible with computers, so I would have been probably paying somebody to make that dream come true and spending even more money to where they'd be like, you know what? Okay, this has to stop now, because there's no return here and I don't know how to get there. So I can just
yeah.
say I'm happy that I made that I did take my time with everything, because had I rushed Rackshine out years back the way it was, you know, it wouldn't have went good, because I did a Kickstarter for one of the source books a few years ago and actually stopped the Kickstarter, because I was like, you know what, I'm asking for too much. Nobody knows who I am. Nobody knows none of this stuff that I'm putting out here. I said I had to pull this thing back, and I said the amount of money I was asking for was a ridiculous amount. It was basically just to cover the source book from a company, you know, because some of these companies, when they say they're going to print your stuff, they got to print in big orders, like 250 books. And
right.
I'm like, I said, and it was going to cost me, basically, by the time this thing would have got to, books would have got to my house, it was going to cost me like 10 G's. So I said,
wow.
I said, there's no way I can sit up and ask for that amount when nobody knows who the heck I am, what this story is about. And my Kickstarter was okay, but I was getting a lot of people inboxing me saying, you know, you might want to do a little bit better of a Kickstarter video to describe this if you're asking for that kind of money. So.
Sure.
I said, let me listen to what's being said out there, you know, and I had to get that thick skin, because, you know, it can make you feel a little, you know, down and everything when people are saying things negative. But what I learned is to get a thick skin and just don't look at it as always a negative, but how can I turn that negative into a positive and just look at what they're saying? Now, there were some people who was just saying stuff to just discourage me altogether. You know, who was just like, you know, yeah,
right.
I wouldn't even waste my time with that kind of story and this and that. I said, well, where's yours? You know, your stuff, you're talking about the same crap that I just saw on TV that was on a sci-fi original movie. You know, we know how those are. So, you know.
Well, that's why we had to invent the word haters.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun, though. That's so important when you're working on a project like this, like, or any project or any creative project, you know, because that was the whole, for me, that was the whole motivation. It's like, if I want to just work myself to death, I can, there's plenty of employers out there who's willing to work me to death, you know, so, but it's like, if I'm going to be investing in something that I'm doing that I like, you know, might as well have fun doing it. That should be the ultimate, you know, bottom line. It's like, okay, do we want to do this, this, and this? But is it fun? Are we going to enjoy that? Or are we just doing it because it seemed like the right thing to do? Or, this YouTube video said that we should do it. It's like,
right.
It has to be fun. It has to be, you know, that's the ultimate, the ultimate bottom line or motivation. So, and it's like, I've known lots of people who work pretty damn good jobs and made, you know, a ton of cash, and they hated their job and they hated their life. I've had people come to me at conventions like, man, I wish I was doing what you was doing. Like, I make good money on my job, but man, I wish I was doing what you was doing. And when
that's what I was saying.
You might not be having a good convention, but when people talk to you and say stuff like that, you start looking around and you look at your art and you realize, like, I guess it's not really as bad as, you know, I thought. Like, maybe I'm not where I want to be yet, but, you know. And even when I'm up at night, you know, working on either my personal art or working on Raxxon or whatever, you know, there'd be those days where you'd be working at night trying to get the deadline or whatever. And I always remind myself, like, well, I could be working a job scrubbing toilets right now. Like, instead of sitting at my drawing board, I could be somewhere scrubbing the toilet. So when I start thinking, I'm like, losing a little bit of sleep this week or this day is not that bad. When you think about it like that, it's like, it's not that bad. So, but yeah, it's gotta stay fun. Like, you gotta enjoy it, you know. Even if it's something that you really, really want to work on, like a book or, you know, art or music, if you're not enjoying it, you know, sometimes you do have to stop and step back and say, okay, maybe I'm just, you know, I'm so deep into this that it's gotten to a point to where it's just a routine and it's not fun anymore. Sometimes you might have to step back and just reevaluate or take a breath, you know, because that can happen too, where you're working too hard on your own stuff. So.
Well, you definitely have to have balance. And like, you know, any creative, especially creatives who live at, you know, places where, like, it gets cold and snow, you know, like us. I'm in Chicago. You guys are up in the Detroit area. You know, there are days when, you know, it's cold as hell, but the sun is out, and you got to get outside and walk around because it does help you clear your mind and regain some perspective. You can't just be stuck in your own head all the time. It just doesn't work.
Yeah,
so,
that's, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was thinking about when it comes to come up with original ideas or good ideas,
mm-hmm.
you know, I always hear this a lot from other artists, like who've already, you know, went from the bottom up doing their own thing. But you have to, you know, live life. Like, no matter how hard you're working or if you're working on your own project, you can't forget to just, you know, live life, go outside, do whatever, have relationships, hang out, do, you know, just do normal. Because most of your inspiration as an artist comes from the world around you. It comes from life. So if you're constantly, if you put yourself in a bubble, it's almost like starving your creativity as an artist. And sometimes you might not even realize it, you know, because you're so focused that sometimes artists, we forget that is where our creativity and originality comes from. Because one thing you can say is that no one else has lived your life but you, you know, all the things you've seen or experienced, you know, and that sometimes is reflected in your stories, you know, and in your art, in your writing, your music, or whatever creative thing that you're doing. So that's one thing I always try to keep in mind. It's like, you gotta, you know, in addition to doing your creative thing, you gotta, you know, take a breath to do normal stuff, and, you know, so.
You know, I always, you know, in that vein, I always wonder what the hell was going through Howard Hughes' head. No, I'm serious, man. How do you get to the point where you're in a room, you know, peeing in jars, and you're not wearing clothes, and you haven't had a shower? I mean, you know, and seriously, man, that sort of thing kind of makes me want to, you know, it makes me get off my ass, put some clothes on, go outside, walk around, go to the store, whatever, because, you know, and the other one was, didn't Jeffrey Dahmer know that eating people wasn't a good thing to do? You know, how did your mind get in such a state that only your mind, you know, is what, you know, how many people do you have to eat before you go, you know, I don't think I'm quite right. Something is not right here. I mean, let's go look in the freezer. Look at all these. You know, I've never been to someone else's house with a whole head full, a freezer full of heads. So, you know, but to what you say, a lot of people do. You know, they do starve themselves of certain stimuli and certain things in the name of trying to move their art or their business forward, and sometimes it's just counterproductive. So I mean,
yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, I was thinking of a couple things. I just forgot one of my train of thought, but I do remember this story. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I think it was Miyazaki, the famous animator who does those Japanese like those really beautiful Japanese animated movies and stuff. But mm-hmm. I think I remember there was a story where someone was trying to animate, you know, because he has a studio, obviously, with animators. And they were trying to animate one of the scenes where, I don't know if you've seen a movie called, what was it, Spirited Away? But
no,
it was
I
a
haven't.
Scene where, it was like this dragon, and it was flopping around or whatever, hurt. And she was trying to put medicine in the mouth of the dragon, trying to give it medicine. And she was trying to lift, you know, realistically animate this. And Miyazaki, you know, he was trying to describe to the animator, like, how to do it to make it look real and give it life and give the character the weight. And so he tried to describe, like, this time he had to feed his dog medicine. And his dog didn't want to take the medicine. So he had to, you know, he went through his description of how he did it. And the animator was just sitting there looking to him like he was talking another language. And so he looked at him. He's like, you never... like had a pet before, like you never tried to, and they were like, no. He was like, what do you guys do all day? And they're like, all we do is anime. And so he was trying to tell them, like, no, you have to go out and do stuff. You have to look, you know, look at the world around you. Look at the way trees blow in the wind and look at, you know, like if you're going to be an animator, and he was trying to describe basically that's why he is such an amazing animator, because he's done all these things in his life. That, you know, and he knows what stuff looks like when it's in motion because he lives, you know, he draws upon experiences he had in his life. And it's funny, but he was talking about the newer animators. All they do is spend their time animating, which is cool, but it's like they can't put the life into their animations because they spend all their time animating. So he was trying to, and I thought that was an interesting story because I'm like, it's interesting that those animators – were probably good animators. It's like they couldn't really, you know, bring the same life into their to work that he does because, you know, simple little stuff like that. You know, like he was, like I said, he took the inspiration from that animated part, from just trying to that one instant in his life where he had to try to feed his dog medicine. And it's funny, but when you look at the scene, it does look so realistic. And just hearing that story, I'm like, there's no way in a million years I would have thought to animate it like that. Like you, nobody ever would. Like you have to, only a mind like his would have, you know, took that experience and translated it in that way. So, but yeah. So
well, I mean, a lot of people are that creative and they do, you know, I think the best creatives are the ones, first of all, they're always learning. You know, they're always a work in progress. And second of all, they do pay attention to what goes on around them.
Yeah.
You know, for me, the hardest thing at first was to write dialogue, but then I started listening to how other people talk to each other, and even though that's not exactly the way you write dialogue in a book, because it is different, it's an artificial language in a book, because like the three of us, you know, we talk over each other, but we still hear each other.
Right.
But if you try to write that in a story, people would be lost, and they'd be throwing your crap away, you know? So, you know, the essence of trying to produce something that has the patina of reality so that people don't have to suspend disbelief is hugely important. I mean, let's say you do a story and then all of a sudden in the story, you know, you haven't discussed magic at all, then somebody all of a sudden turns their car into, you know, a pumpkin and they go to the ball or whatever. people are going to go, what the fuck, you know, what are you talking about here?
Right.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I can see how, I mean, even you guys, even though you're talking mechs, I'm sure that they have to behave in a consistent way. When people are dealing with people, we know what the memes are for communication, conversation, and personality. And I, you know, I can see exactly what he said. You know, what do you guys do? Well, we just do this. We use these tools. We're trying to do this. So how are you going to make the ripples in that pool of water?
Right.
And then, you know, they go, we'll just make some waves. Well, how are you going to do that? You know, so yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, for you guys, you obviously collaborate, but you don't live, you know, that close. You live kind of close. But isn't a certain amount of your synergy generated by the fact that you're not together all the time?
You know, I never really thought about it like that. I guess that,
well, that's why they gave me the show. You know, I get the show because I get to ask that kind of question.
I guess I can say that it is possible to be around someone too much until the point to where you start bumping heads. Like, okay, I need some space. So I can't say that I've had that experience before with people. So, you know, maybe not being, you know, in the same place at the same time all the time is probably it probably is a good thing. Probably
it's a benefit, not a detraction.
Right.
Well,
I mean,
I think if we was, we'd be talking about it too much to where we'd talk ourselves to death with it and just be like, you know what, I need a break from it. And I think those breaks would get bigger and bigger to where we wind up walking away from the project all together.
Or we might not even get any work done.
Right.
I mean, when we do meet up, we'd be like, okay, yeah, he'd be telling me about this idea that he had, and I'd be like, yeah, and I had this idea for this. And next thing you know, it'd be like 5 hours in past. And we'd be like, damn, we just started talking. So we probably wouldn't get any work done because we'd be just spilling out ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how when you're, you know, around someone who's on the same page and y'all just kind of bouncing off each other those ideas. So, I can't say that, you know, being around someone, you know, too much, you know, especially someone you're working with, it can in a way be a negative, you know, because at some point it's like you need that, you know, we're still human, you know, we still need our you know, our space as human beings. So it's like you can just get to a point to where you just start irritating each other.
Oh yeah, I'd be easily irritated and be like, okay, I don't even want to talk about it today.
I know,
you
I
know.
Would too. So I guess that is maybe that is
yeah,
a positive.
The space helps.
Yeah, because
I mean we're not really far. We're not far.
Yeah,
because
we're not far. We could like hang out anytime, like any time really we wanted to. We could just get together and hang out. So that's a
good
thing.
But it's like, you know, I think it's the thing of respecting each other's boundaries, you know, because I know Damone's working and, you know, he's working on projects and I'm not trying to have his whole, you know, world just immersed into Raxxon when I know he's working on other stuff. And just like with me, you know, I got a job and, you know, be doing other stuff. And I, you know, when I'm drawing, you know, I don't always want to just be saying what I'm drawing because I got some people might ask me, hey, can you draw me a mech? Okay. You know, all right, what kind you want, you know, and
right.
May tell him, may not, or may tell him later on when we hook up, you know, and he might look at me like, man, you should have kept that one. I'm like, yeah, probably should have.
Oh, man. Now, let me ask you about you've got the 12th one done. You've got your 11th and a half. You're almost done with your 11th. Could you describe a little bit what your plans are going to be once your compendium of the first dozen are done?
Well, let's see. We have, because there's a few other things we still got to get done that
right.
We were originally trying to launch pretty much in at the same time as the comic was the source book.
Right.
Because
okay.
That's a 260-page book that has, like, characters. That's the main book that has the stats and all of that. Of ships, characters, space stations, you know, history of the planets, the divisions that's within it, you know, and the history of basically a timeline of everything that's how everything came up to where it is right now. Because and that's source book one. And the, what we're planning on doing, and each source book is going to be 260 pages. And
okay.
we already agreed that we're going to have, what is it, I think five or six source books.
Right now we got how many planned? Five?
I think it's going to be, it's four or five. It's,
okay.
It's four to, it might be five. Five
okay,
source
yeah.
books.
Cause I know,
so we got
a
lot of content
yeah.
that's filling up these books because
yeah.
we're still drawing stuff even now. And, like, we got stuff that's already in dang near all five books. Now, they're not, the books aren't full, but we got a lot of content that's actually getting built up as we're going
sure.
along because it's like we're not, it's like when I'm drawing stuff now, I'm actually looking like keep or pass, you know, as I'm just cranking out stuff left and right, you know, when I have time. Sometimes I get into a mode where I might crank out about five or six mechs in 1 week and be like, okay, what do we want to do with these? Well, we can put these in some of the source books. All right. Well, some of these I just hold on and use a scrap, you know, maybe use them or maybe not. But the source book one is something that we wanted to have. We had some rough drafts of source book one at MechaCon this year.
Yeah.
And we had two of them. And those things disappeared off the table so fast it wasn't funny.
Yeah, they
wow.
disappeared pretty quick. Yeah.
So, you know, so the plan for 2018 is to have that source book there, you know, so that if people say, okay, well, I want to learn more about the story, but I'm not really a comic book person. Okay, well, we had a source book here, you know, and they can read the story and learn it that way, or depending on how we may group some things, bundle some packages, buy these,
and then,
get the source book, you know, along with a few comic books, you know, so
mm-hmm.
just little different things to try, you know, just basically get the product out there so that people can see it and try to understand it, because it's not just a comic book, you know, series, that is actually more than that. It's really its own universe that's steadily growing. And I'd say it's almost kind of like you can take Star Wars, you know, and let's just say if you go back in the time of Luke Skywalker, and let's just say you're not focused on the Empire, how many other things was going on in that universe, you know?
Right.
So the same thing could be said here, where things could be going on that were, okay, yeah, we know about the Empire that's happening over there, but we're over here and we're not dealing with that. But there may be interactions here and there with it. So similar things like that are happening in our story, you know. So that's kind of like how we have all this source books with all of this material, because it's
mm-hmm.
a lot of stuff that's happening. So we're pacing it out to where the goal is, like I said, to have all 12 comic books on the table, along with the source book. So that's a total of 13 books right there.
About how much do you sell these for? You know, both the comic books and the source book. Just ballpark figure, because I know it could change.
Comic books we were selling,
for
the physical copies were $5.
About $5. And
the
source book, well, we sold that one. That was just kind of like a first draft. It's not even a first draft. It was more like a rough print, you know, just to see it in print.
Sure.
And we were selling those for how much? About $40? Was it 40?
$35. Sort of
okay.
$35. Started to say $35.99 on it, but it was like, nah, I ain't finna try to deal with no penny. So. And that was a fun thing, too, because one guy asked me, he's like, well, how much is this book? And I froze because I was like, I don't know how much that book is going to go for. You know, because the main thing is I don't want to run them away, you know, because you might say a price and they'd be like, oh, okay, well, you know, put the book back down. It's like, dang it, I want this book to be gone. I want you to have this
right.
book. So I said,
right.
You tell me. He said, can I get $35 for it? And I'm like, yeah. You got $35, I'll take it. You know, have a nice day. Anything else on the table you want? So, and he wound up buying the book, and he wound up buying a few comics as well. So, you know, it was like, okay, cool. You know,
I do have a piece of advice for that in the future. When they say $35, you go, well, normally I wouldn't, but because it's you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't want to sound like you're giving it up too easy, you know?
Right.
Yeah, now, that's why I always have to try to remind him on the sale when it comes to conventions. Cause
now,
me, I want to get stuff out there too, but it's like I kind of got my
yes.
method.
See, Damone's the mean. See, it's like we'd be good cop, bad cop. I'm the good cop because at this convention too, there was this one little girl, and she was adorable, and she was so intelligent with it. She was like, okay, tell me about this story. And I'm looking at this little girl. I'm looking like, how old are you to be asking me these questions like this? And she was so infatuated with the story. I'm telling her, I'm like, I feel like I'm talking to a grown person here. I'm like, okay. And so she's like, and she was looking at this one particular poster, and I was like, I should just give it to her. Damone was like, you better not just give that girl no little poster. I'm like, you're just evil, man. You're just evil. The girl comes back. She was up there, and she asked, how much is the comic books? And I tell her, and she said, oh, okay, I'll be back. She comes back. She buys 3 comic books. And I look at Damone. I'm like, I got to. He was like, okay, yeah, you can give her that poster. I'm like,
yeah,
I got to
like,
give her this poster.
Sometimes you got to be careful, though. Trust me. Sometimes you got to be careful because some people try to get you to lower your price by sending their kids
yep.
over. So,
yep.
you know, so, because me, I'm not completely mean. Like, you know, especially if someone buys something, and like usually on a Sunday, I usually go down maybe a few bucks on my stuff anyway. So I usually don't mind, you know, giving stuff away or giving something that I don't want to carry back home with, you know, to give that. But sometimes you do got to be careful, though. Trust me. You got to be. That's why I was like, yeah, I don't know. You know,
well, people
but,
do
but,
try to work you. I mean, they
right.
do, you know.
Right. And then one thing, too, is I'm like, when it comes to prices, too, I'm like, we got to at least break even, like at least make our money. If we don't make a, you know, a profit off the book or whatever, at least we got to make the cover of printing costs, you know, because we
sure.
don't just want to. We don't just want to give the stuff away.
Right.
Know? And I am.
Well, you are still
with,
running a business. You're
right,
running
exactly.
a business
right.
at the bottom
exactly.
line.
Exactly. And I am the one who came up with the sell anything rule. And
yeah.
I'm just doing conventions. I was like, I would sell the table. Even though I don't even own the table, I sell the table if someone came
across. Yeah,
funny,
see, Damone is
lying.
The kind of,
I ain't even like, I'll sell the tablecloth, whatever.
See, Damone, when he said that, like we had that thing was not 8 feet, it was higher than 8 feet. It was either 9 feet tall Mortar Boy Series 1 at MechaCon. That was next to our table.
Oh, yeah. Right.
One guy was like, I would love to have that. I was like, well, make the all right offer. It's yours. You can take it home. He was like, are you for real? I'm like, yeah. We don't want to take that thing back home. We don't have to.
I had to tell. It's funny, but I remember that first show we did. I had to tell Thomas, like, anything you don't want to sell, don't leave on the table. Like, you leave something on the table and walk away, and somebody walk up and say, how much for that? I'm going to sell it. So, like,
yeah, he tried to sell
to
my first. He tried to get me to sell my first 3D printed ship. And because one guy was asking about it, I was like, oh, I'm not selling this. This was just, you know, we got the ones that's over there for sale. This one's mine. And he was like, well, I want that one. I said, well, make me an offer. And he never came back. And I was like, back in my mind, I was like, thank God, because I like this ship. I don't want to give mine away. It's like,
you know,
this ain't about the money. I want this.
If I ever meet you guys, because I, you know, I threatened to come up to Detroit, you know, whenever the ankle bracelet comes off, I'm going to do more traffic. But if I come by your place and find a whole lot of exit signs and fire extinguishers and stuff like that, I know y'all have gone buck wild crazy. Well, we couldn't sell their own fire extinguishers back to them, so we might as well take them home. We'll finally find a place for them. So, I mean, again, it does sound like, you know, first of all, you got the commerce thing down. You know you can't sell up something and lose money. And then the
right.
other thing is it sounds like you have a good time. I mean, what
yeah.
more could you ask for, you know?
And it's like
yeah.
when I do conventions and stuff, I always tell people, like, one of the reasons why I do sell everything, and that came from I didn't want to be the artist who got a closet full of their own artwork. You know,
right?
I think I had another artist who I follow who had talked about that. Like, there's some artists who don't want to give their work out or sell it, and they just have stacks of artwork, you know, just at their house, their own art.
Right.
And it's like I didn't want to be that. It's like I want my artwork to be out there in the world. You know, I'd rather someone who really, really likes and enjoys my art to have it. I'd rather it be put in their hands, you know. So it's like, and it's, and another thing is too, it's like, if I took all the time to drag all this stuff to this convention, why wouldn't I want to sell it? It's like,
right.
It's like, why wouldn't I? Because I can always buy a new tablecloth or something like that. You know, I don't know why somebody would want to buy the tablecloth, but it's like I could rebuy that, you know. And it's like I'm always going to be creating new art. So it's like if I don't want to sell something, then I just don't bring it to the convention, you know. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and other, there are people, I mean, let's be honest, there are art groupies, there are comic groupies, there are
right.
groupies,
yep.
you know, author groupies, and to them, you know, if they, you know, like if they get something from you, it's worth something to them because they have an affinity for what you do and they respect what you do and they're an actual fan. And, you know, the root of fan comes from fanatic.
Yeah.
So, you know, the one thing you don't want is, you know, you don't want a stalker. You know, I keep thinking about that movie Misery
yeah.
with James Caan.
Oh.
What's her name?
Yeah, I know what the ones you're talking about.
Yeah, don't nobody want a fan like that. You know,
no.
I like my ankle. So,
and
know,
not being forced
a,
to write an ending.
Yeah. You can't just kill her. Yeah, so no. Oh, man, I actually had a friend of mine who's also a member of BlackScienceFictionSociety.com. She read my second book, and she was pissed. She was so pissed that a character died. Oh, and oh, she read me the Riot Act, you know. But I mean, it,
wow.
It, you know, and, that, and of course, that's what's going through my head, you know, to a 4x4 and a what was that? A sledgehammer. So, you know, you don't want people to get too invested in your stuff, at least not in a crazy way. I got another question for you guys that's kind of because you really put this together well at the very beginning, which gives it so much life, you know, for practically, I mean, you could, you know, despite what, you know, despite Thomas wanting to, you know, get rich and get out, you still could. Well, I mean, come on. Isn't that the dream of everybody? You know, okay, I'll tell you the beautiful story that the one story. I'm also a filmmaker, and I have a movie that I want to make. It's a comedic bank heist movie. But then I think about the biggest, like Robert Redford paid $8 million for the option on The Horse Whisperer before the book was done.
Mm.
Now, if somebody comes to you guys and say, hey, we would like to take Raxxon into the 3D animated world, and we'd like to, you know, get an option from you guys so that we could do that. First of all, I know I'm sensing probably that you guys would definitely have some back end conditions on
yeah.
anybody who's going to take your content because you have
definitely.
So much invested in it. You know,
well,
although,
it's like, that's, yeah.
if, go ahead.
No, I'm saying that's a very that's one of those things where it's like if you're gonna give up the rights to your project, either merchandising or you know film or whatever, you gotta realize that you'll probably have to give up creative freedom also. It's like once you can't just think that oh yeah I'll give them the movie rights, but I'll also help them develop the script. It's like, no, once they buy it, there's a chance that you may not get no creative freedom or no rights to what the final product looked like, you know? So
right.
that's one thing
right.
you have to take in. And so it's like, when you make a decision like that, we have to really think, do we really want, you know, someone re-envisioning our stuff in a different medium? Like if you're okay with living with that, it's like, sure. Because I always think back to the horror story, one of the horror stories of this movie called The Crow. I don't know if you remember that movie.
They're remaking it.
Yeah, the artist was actually from Michigan. I believe he was from the Detroit area too. And he sold the movie rights just for like a, you know, I think a couple thousand or something. It was really, really low. And they made that movie. And the sad part is he got no money from it. Not only that, he got no say into what the final product looked like. And even though I heard they're trying to reboot it, or they plan on doing a reboot of the film, he won't get any money from that either, and he won't get any say what it looks like. And it's funny, but when I read the comic, because I had a chance to read the comic, and I'm like, this is almost completely different from the movie. I'm like, the comic experience, I'm like, wow, there was so much more depth to that story that never made it to film. Like,
right.
And nobody will ever know that. Like, nobody, unless you're a comic book fan. And I'm like, how does he probably feel? You know, just every time he looks up at the TV and see a commercial of his stuff, you know, how does he, and it's like, and then there's another artist too, where that was kind of a heartbreaking story, is one of the famous comic book artists. I want to say it was Jack Kirby, maybe. I'm not sure, but he helped create a lot of the comic book characters you see on screen now, all these superhero movies. But he never got any money or any recognition. Everybody know about Stan Lee, but the artist who actually drew these characters, who worked on these comics, who made them what they were, got no money, no recognition, no nothing. Like, he literally died as a nobody. Like, could you imagine that? Could you imagine literally spending most of your life creating all these amazing things, and you don't even get, like, just like even money aside, it's like you don't even get acknowledged. It's like nobody, you just die, you just pass away as a nobody. And I'm like, how? And it was like, it was so bad to where, like, even if you were, like, a lot of artists who knew him, when they would go see him or whatever, and they would have conversations about the stuff that Marvel was doing or whatever with the heroes, it would literally make him so depressed he couldn't even draw, like, for the next couple of weeks. Like, just, you know, talking about these heroes and stuff that he spent his entire life drawing and making them what they were. And I'm like, I don't want to be that. Like,
I'll tell you how you can avoid that. There's only one way to avoid that. And too many creatives won't do it because they think it's costing them money. You have to have good representation.
Yeah, that's right? True. That's very, very true.
And a whole lot of creatives think, oh, I don't need a lawyer for this. It's just going to cost me money. And it does cost them money. It cost them all the money that they missed out on because they didn't have somebody negotiating for them.
That's very true. Telling them what's going on.
Now, if they turn my trilogy Darkseid into a mini series, you know, I'm going to demand only one thing, and I'll ask for other things. I'm going to demand a writing credit on every episode, because then I know I'm going to get $30,000 to $50,000 per episode. Okay, and I deserve a writing credit, because if I hadn't written it, it wouldn't exist. So that's probably something that they'll give up, because they know I can always say no, and then I might ask for something else. But I'm going to make damn sure. You know, let's say they stretch it out for 5 years, like they did for Breaking Bad, or what they're doing with what is that, The Last Ship. You know, you've got like a 5-year run. Well, okay, so every single one of those episodes, $50,000, that's a nice nest egg that I can put away. But there are some people who think, oh, I don't need an attorney. I don't need an attorney to read all that fine print. I can read it and understand it. Oh, no, you can't. This is why they have law schools. This is why these guys make so much money, because they keep people from making mistakes if people look out for themselves by hiring an attorney. So, I feel bad for creatives who have lost all their stuff. You know, the guys who originated The Walking Dead, they are well represented. And so, they get to keep an eye on the storyline. They make sure that the thing's not bastardized in a way that diminishes their work.
But I will
tell you, the biggest mistake every creative makes is thinking that they're smarter than a studio. So that kind of comes back to you guys. I mean, you know, if someone wants to take your work, you know, video or 3D animation or movie or episodic, some sort of episodic adventure, you know, you guys, I'm pretty sure you guys are going to find yourself some decent representation.
Oh, yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
That's where I fork out a lot of money just to make sure that we have that, because I look at a lot of movies like pretty much dang near every anime that Hollywood has touched has been garbage, you know,
yeah.
And it's like,
yep.
I would never want to be the person who originally started that and looking at those movies and being like, you know, looking at Scarlett Johansson playing Motoko Kusanagi in Ghost in the Shell. And it's like, no,
yep.
You can't, no. And just like the, you know, they got more coming out, Battle Angel. And I'm like, I already saw who's playing that character. And I'm like, no. Oh, my God, no.
Yeah,
this is going to be another flop. You know, yeah. And it's like, and then one of the biggest ones,
Akira,
Dragon Ball. That was
Akira.
The worst.
Yeah, Dragon Ball was the worst.
Right.
Akira. I think there's only one adaptation that I enjoyed. And the funny thing is, they changed the name of it. So they didn't like completely just, they completely changed the name of it. They changed the characters, obviously, but they kept the meat of the story.
Okay.
And that was only one that I enjoyed, and I didn't even know it was an adaptation until I looked it up, and I was like, well, no wonder the story is so good. But I like the fact that they changed it, that they didn't just... I don't know if you remember that movie with Tom Cruise called, The Day After Tomorrow or something like that? Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
That was actually a manga adaptation, and I actually thought that was a pretty good, pretty decent concept. You know, the way they did that movie, I was like, it's funny, I didn't think it would be that good, but I'm like, that's a pretty interesting concept, you know, for a story. So I don't know if you guys seen that, but...
Yeah,
I thought
no,
that was pretty interesting.
I enjoyed it, but, you know, what they did, which was what most Hollywood adaptations don't do, they kept it character-driven.
Right.
You know, the characters moved the story along. It wasn't just these monsters, you know, and what have you. But it was how the people reacted to the situation they were in.
Right.
Go ahead.
That's kind of what I liked about the story, that it was about that you saw the experience from those characters' point of view. It wasn't just, like I said, a standard, anybody can do a standard alien, monster, human battle story or whatever. But the way
right.
they did it from the character's point of view, you know, and even the concept of how this little creature thing, you know, I guess worked. I thought that was an interesting concept too. So, one important thing about the fact that they changed it, which surprised me, is usually the one main reason why Hollywood would want to buy your stuff is not because they want to adapt it. It's because they want the name. That's why if you notice some movies come out where it'd be called like Dragon Ball Evolution, but it's absolutely nothing like the Dragon Ball story. Like, in the movie, the Dragon Balls are created by these wise men or whatever, and Piccolo was from another dimension. It's like, and you're looking at this, you're like, this is nothing like, nothing like...
Like 80s Street Fighter.
Street Fighter. But it's like, what people don't realize is they just wanted the name, because the name gets more ticket sales, get more butts in the seat. So, because
sure.
Everybody knows what Dragon Ball is. Now, if they created an original story, that's a harder sell, but when you're a big company, you could just say... You know, Naruto, the movie, it doesn't matter if it's about Naruto. It has the name Naruto. Everybody knows what that is. They're like, oh, I know what that is. That's the anime. So, and sometimes studios will do that. They will just buy it just to get the name. So.
And that again, is another business decision. I'm feeling kind of positive. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, me, honestly, when it comes to our stuff, I would rather... If we could be in position to produce it ourselves, you know, even if we have to work with a big studio, you know, I would rather be the only thing I could think of right now is Dan O'Bannon. I don't know if that's the guy who did Alien.
Right.
I would rather be in his position. You know, what he did with Alien was he wrote the story and then he pitched it to studios, you know, and then, but he was in position to where, when, you know, they finally picked up his story, he actually, him and his buddy, him and his best friend, they actually wrote the screenplay. They actually were the ones who hired and brought in the crew. Like, he was the one who hired H.R. Giger to design the alien design or whatever. Ridley Scott was brought in by the studio, but, you know, Ridley Scott was, you know, he was a good director choice for the film. But it's like he was in a position to where he didn't lose his story. It was still his story, you know. It was, he could still have freedom to do whatever he wanted with it. And I would rather be in a position like that to where even if we didn't have the money to produce it ourselves, we could pitch it to a studio ourselves, you know, because it's always a frightening thing when a studio comes to you and like, yeah, we'll throw you some cash and, you know, for the movie rights or the merchandising rights, because it's like, even with that case, you're still not in position to control the final result. And sometimes that's, I mean, if you're okay with that, if you're like, I don't care what they do with it because, you know, I still got my original novel or my original comic, so whatever they do with the film, I don't care. But if you want to keep control, you know, sometimes even when a studio says, hey, yeah, we'll throw you, you know, a creative credit in there or whatever, you don't want to end up in a position of Lucas, which is interesting because he sold, you know, Star Wars for billions of dollars. And believe it or not, in the contract, he was supposedly supposed to have creative freedom. Supposedly they were supposed to still take his ideas and do the whole Game of Thrones thing. So I don't know if you know, you remember the Game of Thrones TV show where the writer on that, he's not writing a screenplay, but he gives HBO, okay, this is what's going to happen next in the novel, because he's
right.
still writing some of the story, and they adapt the shows after that. Well, Lucas was supposed to have the same sort of deal with Disney, but as you can see from the films, they just completely ignored him. Like, they just completely ignored anything he wanted, and they just made what they wanted to. And the sad thing, mm-hmm. there's not much he can do about it, because it's technically
he's
theirs.
He signed the contract. He signed
it
right, away.
Right. So
I had a thought. I mean, if you guys ever decide this, well, first of all, BlackScienceFictionSociety.com is, you know, Jarvis has put together a studio to do 3D animated movies. And as life goes on, hopefully the studio gets bigger, there's more talent that's attracted to it. Sometimes you could put your team together and then go looking for funding. If people see that you've got competent people, and you've done a trailer that really shows off the best of what you guys can do, you can retain that control. But the fact of the matter is, you know, studios don't think guys like you and I have the least bit sense and are capable of, you know, charting the course of something that's going to cost millions. And for them, it is a business decision, but the business
right.
decision is made based on, well, we can do this better. And let me go get these three, you know, monkeys who did this script for whatever and have them put it to a script for this. And, you know, a lot of the time, those three guys who are writing the script are not familiar with the source material.
Yeah.
They look at a summary. They look at a trailer, or whatever you produce that's little that they could read in about 5 minutes, they'll look at that, and then from there they're going to make up some story that has nothing to do with your stuff. So I'm thinking, you know, I don't see you guys letting go of your stuff that easily, but I think that if you get to the point where you want to, you know, go into another, you know, another media, that if you put together your team and it's a team of good people and you have a good direction, I think, you know, getting the money to do it, you know, maybe Disney will throw you some money and say, okay, we'll back the first one. We'd like you to use Pixar to help you do the animation because blah, 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 cost effective or, you know, economy of scale or whatever excuse they make. I think the important thing is to retain your intellectual property, to retain control of
right.
intellectual property.
And see, that's one thing where I said about the tortoise and the hare, where it's like when you take the tortoise approach and you kind of go through the long haul of building your story up, building up your brand and your experience and more importantly, your fan base, you know, of people who enjoy your content. It gives you not only leverage, but it also shows studios that this is a solid project that can, you know, bring us money. Because you can't really fault big companies because it's like, okay, if they're going to throw you a couple millions for your project, obviously they want to see a return on that. They are still a company, you know. So
sure.
at the same time,
sure.
it's like, you know, you got to show them that, okay, this is something that not only can be made, but that's something that will benefit us as well as you, you know. And that's how you can get into that position. Like I said, with Game of Thrones, that story is so popular and, you know, he's such well-known as a writer that obviously, when he throws ideas at HBO, they're going to listen to it, you know, especially because they don't want to have to explain to fans why they made these huge changes to this beloved story, you know, but he's in that position to get that. But that didn't happen overnight, you know. It's like that's something that took time to build up to that point, you know. So
we were talking about there, too.
And I was thinking
it's the investment in time to get your work in front of the eyes of the maximum amount of people you can. That's
right.
That's your investment at the beginning, because that's the one that's going to pay off at the end. Because if there are that many people, and also you got big mouth people out there. So like, what if they take your series and all of a sudden they want to make it all white people in the thing? Blah blah blah.
That's another problem you can have too. Exactly. Like
well,
you don't have creative freedom. That's something that could happen.
You've got leverage, because if you make a big enough stink about it, there's a whole lot of people who are going to go, well, why are they whitewashing this material? And then if you've watched studios in the past 3 years back down in a number of different characters where they've tried to whitewash them. So you've got a little bit of leverage there, and over the long haul, you know, hopefully you're going to be able to retain more control over your intellectual property, because there are so many distributors out there. You know, ten years ago, you had a dozen people who would do movies and TV shows, and they had their gatekeepers, they had leverage. But now you've got Amazon, you've got HBO, you've got Stars, you've got Netflix. Mm-hmm. Look what happened with Luke Cage. Luke Cage broke Netflix.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
So what does that tell business? What does that tell money people?
And that's what I always try to encourage, you know, like, especially African-American artists and creators. Like, you know, yes, it can sometimes feel like, you know, it's harder to climb up that ladder. But it's like, don't let that discourage you. Just put in the hard work. Like, you put in the hard work and, you know, you stick with whatever it is that you're doing, your passion, and you build yourself up. It goes a long way in the end. It doesn't seem that way in the beginning, because I think about recently directors like Ryan Coogler, the guy who's directing the Black Panther movie. You know, he went from being nobody that you would be familiar with to being, you know, now he's directing a huge multi-million-dollar, you know, superhero film. In a short amount of time, when you think about directors who have to spend almost 20 or 30 years of their life before they get a studio to put them on a big project, you know, because he did Fruitvale Station and Creed, but one thing about him too is like the studio didn't just have confidence in him because he's black. They know he's a solid director. You know, his past work speaks for itself. They've seen the stuff that he did, you know, and it's like, okay, it's like we know we put him on this film, we have a solid director. And so it's like when you take the time to build yourself up, you know, you end up instilling that sort of confidence, you know, because they don't want the guy who's like, yeah, I just made a comic, you know, and it's like, how long have you been doing comics? Oh, well, I just drew this one up a couple months ago, and, you know, it's like that doesn't instill a lot of confidence in the studio who's willing to throw out a couple hundred million dollars. It's like, yeah, I don't know about that. But, you know, when you're like, yeah, we've been working on this for such years, this is our fan base, you can see all these comics that we have this part of the story, it's like, wow, these people have, it's like, wow, they don't have a story, they have a whole brand, you know.
Yeah,
and that makes companies happy when they look at you and they're like, oh, you guys are our brand. You know,
you still have lightning strikes. You could still have lightning strike, because look at Jordan Peele, look at what's her name, who directed Wonder Woman, you know.
Right.
I mean, you have the opportunity, and because it is an audience driven, it's a dollar driven endeavor, if you do good work and it pays off, then you know, that lifts you over so many hurdles. You know, like, let's say you guys decide to animate your first comic, okay? Let's say you go ahead and it's a 5-year project for you, which would have taken somebody else a year. But, you know, like Thomas says, you have to have the money, you have to get it on time, you have to get the right people. But let's say you guys do that, and you all of a sudden you release it, and you it, let's say it took you $5 million, and mm-hmm. and you get a return of, let's say a modest return of $35 million. That's a big damn deal, guys. You know what
yeah.
I mean? For a $5 million investment to return itself sixfold is a big deal. And we know that you did not have a studio marketing budget. You know,
right.
It was your fans who originally drove people to come see what it was, and then it was word of mouth that kept the wave going. So, you know, you're right, Damone, that there is, obviously there's the trust factor for people who do blockbusters, but every now and then someone manages to make that surprise. And I was listening to Jordan
yeah.
Peele, and somebody said, oh, I think it was Stephen Colbert. Oh, you must be really rolling in it now. And he said, well, no, not so much. And the reason is obvious. You know, he wasn't that well known. What he did was he was taking a chance, but then the people really, really got behind it, and a lot of people went and saw it, and it made a lot of money. Well,
right.
Now, his next movie, he's going to be able to keep more of the money that comes in as a result, because exactly like you said, Damone, he has a track record now.
Right.
But that
right.
lightning, that doesn't mean that the lightning can't strike you two guys as co-producers and co-directors for your own work. You know,
and that
you just want
right.
to be able to put in the time. Go ahead.
Right.
And that's funny, too, because it's like that's what my plans was for, like, this coming year, is to work on a lot of foundation stuff.
That's
you know, like, like yeah, because I was like, let me get it out, because we would say we wanted to, you know, work on building the fan base, the social media, you know, really getting the work that we already have done, because we got a lot of comics now. And,
right.
you know, having that 11th book finished, that's going to be a goal, you know, that I'm going to make sure that's taken care of. But even with 11 comics, that's still a lot of comics to have, and that we need people to know that they are out there. Because I've had people, you know, inbox me saying, hey, where can I get your comics from? You can buy them from me directly if you want one right now, you know, just let me know. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But it's the thing of, you know, getting our website finished and putting together our true plans of action of where are we going next, you know, how we have comics, how we're working on having 3D prints, you know, for sale, because
sure.
we're not just trying to play with them for ourselves. you know, and then the next phases, you know, are we going to move to, because there's other things that we want to do, like tabletop games, RPGs. We are talking about doing animation, you know, in which direction do we want to go with it, as far as a movie, because that's funny that you said animating the first comic book, because that was actually what I had said we could do, you know, because I said it's a shorter comic book, and it kind of gets straight to the point, and it kind of tells what's all going on right in it without it being extra long, you know, because you figure most if I did a 22-minute animation, you know, which is pretty much what animes are anyway, or animations are without commercials, you know,
sure.
put that out there and run it on, you know, on our own website, YouTube, or pitch it to, like, say, sites, places like Netflix. Another one is El Rey Network, because I like that channel because it's Michael Rodriguez's channel, and he calls it the People's Network. And they allow people to send in, you know, their short movies, indie movies, and everything like that, and they'll show them. So, and so stuff like that, you know, is directions that I said what we want to sit down and work on, because, like I say, I want to play a video game of it, you know, because
yeah.
I like tangible stuff, you know, I like to be able to hold it, I like to be able to set it up on a table, look at it on the wall, and, you know, the ultimate for me is playing it in a game as well, and watching it on, just being able to look at it on TV, you know, or playing it on a computer, or on your big screen at home, you know, just saying, okay, man, these guys really went all out with this, that, you know, they're not just, playing around in the basement. No, they really did it, because that's the one thing that Mom was always cracking up telling me, saying people gonna hate us when we go to these conventions, you know. And I'm like, hey, my thing is, I said, you don't want to get me started with this with go big or go home, because, you know, I was now this is another thing too, and this is Damone's fault, this is all his fault, so I want this to be known. When
okay.
he was talking about
all
making
right.
this when he was talking about making this the Mortar Boy S1, for the table at first. I was thinking he was going to make a 3 foot tall, maybe, you know, big mech to sit on the table, maybe 2 feet, just something
sure.
big just to stand out and bring it. Then he shows me this picture of the torso, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm like, what the hell? No, I'm not mistaken. He showed
the
gun.
The gun
was bigger than his table. The gun was pretty much taller than me.
It was taller
and I'm
than
like,
me.
I'm like, and he's like, yeah, and it's going to be able to hold this. And I'm like, my God, how big is this thing? He's like, yeah, it's going to be taller than my ceiling in my apartment. And I'm like, okay, that's more money. I got to fork out for more space. But okay.
Right.
So, you know, okay, well,
if
we're going to do that, then
shipping,
then
getting
let's
it
do
there,
it.
What are you going to do? You know, carry it there, you know, between you. You got to get it someplace. You got to set it up. I mean, that's
and we did it because I was like, okay, now that means I got to get a rent, a U-Haul. So,
right. Mm-hmm.
And we did it, and, you know, it was an excellent turnout because we had so many people coming up saying, who drew this? I was like, I drew it. He built it. This is on you can see it on the backdrops and everything. And they're like,
people
oh, wow. You know,
with it and...
I mean, so many families was coming up taking pictures with it and everything. And it was like the biggest, it's like no matter where you were in that room, you could see it. You know,
and
nobody's banners was bigger than ours.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that goes back to about having fun. Because, man, getting that thing built was a monster, you know.
Yeah, he was actually still building the stand on the parking lot
the
day of the convention.
The day of the convention. Like, I don't know. Like, we were up that night, had to go to Home Depot to get stuff. And it's like, man, I'll never forget how tired I was either. I mean, we were both, like, dead tired. Like, I didn't even think we were going to make it to the next day because we were tired.
So, I say that that's DeMole's fault because DeMole got me started on the thing. I told him a long time ago. I said, when I get started on something, I don't play around with. I say, don't start something you can't finish with me because you'd be like, well, we could do this. Okay. As soon as I figure out that we can or figure out a way that it could get funded and it's done, I'm like, well, what's the problem? Why are we moving so slow with it now? You said we could do this. You know, it's like, don't put your foot in your mouth. You know, put your money where your mouth is. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to call you on the carpet. Because I'm like, let's get it done.
And I'm a completionist, so it's like, whenever I start something, I got to finish it, you know.
You got to finish,
Even if it take me longer than I thought of, I'll work on it to death until it's finished, you know, so. Looking back on that experience, it is kind of funny, you know. It like I said, it goes back to that thing about, you know, sometimes it can be hard just, you know, doing the hard work and putting in the time. But at the same time, when you look back on that time that you spent, that's still an experience that you can reflect on, you know. Like when we were building that thing in the parking lot and people were looking out their window like we were crazy. Like, what are they building a giant mech in the middle of the parking lot? But
when we got it inside the building and put it together, it was like, wow. Okay.
People were looking at us crazy when we were just carrying it up because, like, the arms and stuff was, like, as tall as me.
Huge.
You
know?
So
yeah.
People were looking like, what is this big arm that they're carrying? But
the main thing was we had fun. And, you
know,
I was telling people, you know, people that came up, I said, if you're here and you're selling your stuff, if you're sitting at your table looking all mean mugging, you know, you're wasting your own, you're killing yourself because I said, as much stress as this thing might have got us, I'm going to be laughing my butt off because at this point, I don't care if we sell a comic in here. It's just that we're here and we having fun and we got it done, you know, and
right.
If any words that I can give anybody of encouragement and tell them, you know, just take pride in your project and have fun with it.
Right.
You know, you can get it done, you know, if you, and set reasonable goals. If you don't think you can get it done this year, okay, and you really hell-bent on it, well, if you think you can get it done, then get it done. But be realistic and don't kill yourself with it. But if going all out is where you strive best at, then go for it because, you know, in the end, it's up to you on what pace you set yourself. You know, because,
right.
like, I want to do the animation and I want to have it done in a few years. I don't want to take
right.
5 years. I'm the kind
right.
of person that's like, well, let's find out who can get it done for us with the price we need. And or who can work with us, like you said, with Jarvis, just talking with him. I'm like, well, we can always talk with him and find out, okay, well, if
Because
that's an avenue we can take.
I definitely want to do an animation, and even a video game, because I have a little experience in that stuff. You know, originally years ago, that's what I went to college for, computer animation and programming. So, but it's like I've done that enough years that I know how much time and work that it takes. So it's like I don't want to necessarily jump in head first, knowing that I don't necessarily have the hours in the day to invest completely in it. You know. Because one of my main concerns is always stretching myself too thin, to where I'm working on 100 different things, but I'm not getting anything done, or I'm not putting myself into stuff that I'm doing. You know, I'm just at a point to where I'm just trying to meet deadlines or get stuff out the door, and I don't have enough time to even actually enjoy what I'm doing. So I don't want to be in that position. It's like, you know, I want to at least complete a thing before you move on to the next step. So, but yeah, but definitely next year, like Thomas was saying, that's one thing we're bad at is marketing ourselves. And I think most artists are bad at that.
Well,
and
no,
that's
you're not fun at. No, you're not. Stop and think, guys. How much did it cost to make that display?
Well, when I say marketing, I mean like,
well, no,
really,
no. I mean,
really?
No, yes, I know what you're saying. But what you don't realize is how many people saw that and will never forget you.
That's true.
Probably everybody.
Exactly. And see, I will let you in on a secret that I figured out. When did I figure it out? About a year ago. For content creators, it is often better to exploit the culture of celebrity, you know, your own celebrity, than sometimes it is to push your own work. Because if people get to know you as a person, if a lot of people get to know you as a person and they like you, then they will seek out what you do and seek out your products and seek out your creative endeavors. All right. This is one of the things that I'm exploiting now. I went to Worldcon. And I ran a bunch of these discussions, and the Worldcon people thought that I was personable. They liked my sense of humor, and very, very soon I'm going to start lobbying to be the master of ceremonies at the Hugo Awards. Okay.
Wow.
Now, and here's my hook, and I hope they're not listening. Nah, they're not. But here's the thing. Worldcon and a lot of these other big national conventions have now – they understand diversity, and they understand the sociological and financial benefits of diversity. All right, Luke Cage, all of these other, Black Panther, all of these vehicles that are non-white themed at heart are making money. And they 2 years ago, November, almost three years ago. Someone did a study in Hollywood and found that movies that had diverse casts made more money.
Yeah, I think I've seen.
Okay.
Study
yeah.
Something similar to that.
Here's the deal. I'm going to go. You know, my pitch to Worldcon is you don't get much more diverse than a half black, half Japanese lesbian trapped in a man's body. Okay. So you put me up there. You put me up there as the master of ceremonies for the Hugos. And as you guys know, I'm fun. I'm personable. I can make a joke. You know, I don't have a problem in front of crowds unless I'm dressed poorly. But see, that's the thing. If all of a sudden I'm up there and I do well with all of those sci-fi people, what happens for me? Everybody goes, well, who was that Hayashi guy? Who was that lesbian trapped in a man's body? Who was whatever hook that they whatever hook that they hang on me is part of that cult of personality. And a lot of creatives don't for various reasons don't always exploit that. You know, some people are shy. Some people want to do their work and not be bothered with the marketing of themselves. You know, they want their work to speak for them. But I know that if there's 5,000 people there who find out who I am, out of those 5,000 people, there's going to be a certain number who are going to seek out what it is that I do. So that's kind of my shortcut to doing it, because I don't have a HarperCollins budget. I don't have a Penguin budget, you know, to advertise my books.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to go about it another way, and that is getting in front of the target audience, you know, so they get talking. And already, just a couple months ago, I had my first inquiry for someone who wants to option my Dark Side trilogy for adaptation to TV or movie. If that happens, that also helps. That also increases my visibility. But there are so many ways to market, and the ones that we all know and we all have been pushing are perseverance. You have to get out there. You have to put out a good product. You have to put out a good product consistently. You have to do it basically on time or in a time frame where people don't forget about you. You have to think about, you know, increasing your scope by, okay, for you guys, animation, 3D animated movie, you know, or do, you know, however you're going to do it. So you have all of these little ways of doing it, you know, and it's more than just, you know, some people say, oh, all you need is social media. Ah, bullshit. Sorry for the thing, Jarvis, when you listen to this. But it's not, you know, for you to sit around and scream at your friends that you just did something, that can become annoying pretty quick, you know?
Yeah. I always say that if you're screaming at your family and friends, then you're kind of doing it wrong.
Right. Well, that's the thing. But see, until you reach a certain threshold, until you get to the point where you have thousands of people following you on social media, whether it be Facebook, Pinterest, whatever the other ones are. I don't do very many of them because I'm old. But until you reach a certain threshold, that's what you're doing. You are annoying your family and friends.
Right.
So it's best that you find a way to exploit other ways to get visible, you know, and I think you guys are great because I see the potential that you have, and I don't mean potential like, you know, when they're talking about you in fifth grade trying to make you feel bad for, you know, messing up your class. It's not that kind of potential, but the real potential of you having a solid product that could become, you know, an animated series. When you look at that, and then now you look at where we once had a dozen content creators of studios, what have you, where now you have, you know, 30, 40, 50, and they're not just in the United States of America, there's much more opportunity, and all of those people now know that content is king, so they are looking for content. They're looking for you now, so that's a cool place for you guys to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, that's true. It's very true.
Anyway, we got about a couple minutes. Is there anything that you can think of that you really want to tell the people, you know, that's important to you? I think we cover a lot of stuff. 2 hours is a long time, but, you know, I try to make it go as fast as possible. But, I mean, let me ask you this question. What has been the biggest disappointment that you guys have faced as content creators? Something that might have been a roadblock that really got in your way and may have, you know, hurt you or pissed you off or whatever. Can you think of something, or have you been fairly lucky?
I'd say for me, it's something that was one thing that you have no control over, time.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, when you're working on a project, time flies.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like when you're trying to get for a deadline, if you're trying to get for a convention, or if you're just trying to set a date, that's the thing, is that it's like, crap, that the deadline is already here. Now I got to change the deadline. But as long as I'm having fun with it, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Damone?
I mean, I can agree with that. That's the only thing that the only main thing or hurdle that I can think of too is time. It just always seems like there's never enough time in a day. So especially when you're just as ambitious as we are and got so much that you wanna do. So.
And you have so many things that do call for your attention. You know, you can't always just do just that one thing.
One of the main things, like I said, I wanted to work on was kind of what you were saying, was basically expanding your exposure to the world, you know, and to get into your stuff out there, because nobody can buy your stuff or love your stuff or hate your stuff if they don't even know it exists, you know. So and that's one thing I feel like we haven't fully invested enough time and energy into, you know, which is kind of on purpose because, you know, we said we wanted to make the product first. We wanted to make these comics, get them in print, you know, get these ships, 3D print it, you know, get stuff done. And now that we're at that point, it's like I want to put more time and energy into, okay, putting this stuff out there, you know, which I feel we could do better at and do more with, you know. So,
man. All right. Well, you know, I want to thank you guys for showing up again. It was good talking to you again. It's nice to catch up and see where you all are. I'm glad to hear you're almost done with the first dozen because that's going to be a big milestone for you guys. Well, isn't
it? Oh, yeah.
Don't you think
so?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 We're going to catch up with you further down the road, you know, as long as you don't go bankrupt, get sued to death, or, you know, one of them is talking like some happy face kind of character or something. I want to thank you guys for showing up tonight. I had a good time. I hope you guys did too, because I do enjoy talking to you.
I enjoyed being on the show.
I want to thank everybody who stuck with the show live and hung out in the chat room. Thank you for supporting the show. Jarvis appreciates it. He's taking care of something in the studio, actually. So he's not around to close the show tonight. I want to thank the people who picked this up as a podcast. Your support is always welcome. And I want to thank also, you know, the fact that so many people have invested time and energy in BlackScienceFictionSociety.com. And keep it going with great content, you know, artwork, articles, videos, book excerpts, things like that. And you guys, have you been putting? I have to admit, I haven't really noticed. Have you guys been putting up when you're going to be at these various conventions so that people can come by and see you?
Yeah.
You put it up on the events calendar at BSFS.
That I didn't do.
Okay,
right,
think
why
about
I gotta start
that
doing
because
more.
You know. A bunch of people, Jarvis and a bunch of people, travel up to Detroit to go to the, you know, various Black Age conventions. And like I said, when I get the ankle bracelet off, I'm going to do the same damn thing because, you know, I'm tired of being in the house. So do that because if people are looking for something to do on the weekend and there's, you know, one of those conventions or one of the shows up there and you're going to be there, you know, it gives people an opportunity to meet the people who actually created this and maintain it. And the fact that you guys have fun would make a good visit and a good meeting, okay?
Definitely.
Definitely.
All right. Well, Thomas, Simone, thank you very much. I'm going to close out the show in a minute. If you guys could just stay on the line just for a few minutes afterwards, just in case there's some cool things we want to talk about that nobody who didn't listen to the show is going to hear. That's my bait.
Okay.
You know, to get people listen. All right, and thank you everybody in the chat room who listened online. We will be back next week with some more brand new people. All right, so good night everybody. Thanks guys.